Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Tuesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. On today's Noon Business Hour, we are going to take a look at the stimulus in just moments. What is it expected to do to the economy? Does it actually move things forward? Microsoft is partnering with General Motors on self-driving cars, bringing them a step closer to reality. And we have the latest in the streaming wars as they continue to heat up. The Biden pandemic stimulus plan, all the talk on Wall Street. David Jones is here, chairman of DMJ Advisors. He is author of the book Understanding Central Banking. David, it's good to have you here. Do we have a sense yet that when it comes to stimulus and these checks that are going out specifically, do they actually move the needle on the economy?
Well, they may move that needle temporarily. And in the very short term, it's more money in people's pockets and thus stronger demand. And we certainly need that demand to boost output and employment. That labor market needs a lift. So short term, it's good news. It may take a while for that to be reflected in the overall economy. I'm still very cautious about the outlook for the early part of 2021. I think we could get a much better second half. And for the year, we could get a fairly decent growth number. But there's a lot of questions. A big one in former Fed Chairman Yellen's testimony today was whether or not that promised Biden tax hike can be delayed. She hinted that it might be. That could give the stock market a boost fairly soon.
Now let's talk about the need maybe for more unemployment assistance. How important is it that until we're through this pandemic and employment gets to some sense of normalcy, how important is it that there continues to be more money in that pot?
Well, that's a key question, and it was hinted that we're going to get perhaps a significant amount of money for those unemployed. You know, this is still a unique situation with the pandemic causing this shutdown in the economy and so many people to lose jobs, and the very least the government can do is to focus on that. That was one of my problems with the $1.9 trillion Biden stimulus package. I didn't think it focused enough on the immediate needs of the worker thrown out of a job. So it would be very helpful to boost that unemployment spending.
Let's talk about one of the things going on Capitol Hill today. You have Janet Yellen, who is in the middle of her Senate confirmation hearing, at least going through the original stages of it. What do you make of her? Obviously, well-respected former Fed chair, and yet this is a different sort of role being Treasury Secretary.
Without any question, she was well-respected as Fed chair. I would argue she may have had too much of an easy money fixation, but everyone respected her job for 4 years as Fed chair. But we really need, I think, someone other than an academic economist to make the case for President Biden's program. You know, somebody with stature from success in the business sector, you know, whether it's a Jamie Dimon or some other business leader who's a Democrat, it just seems that you need a stronger, more visible spokesman for the president's policies. and not a lot of argument in the academic weeds.
So that would be more of the role of an advisor, sort of advising the president on what he should or shouldn't do.
That's exactly right. And that would really be my argument, particularly for Treasury Secretary. That's kind of the key pivot point, I think, for the president's program. And we just need a strong spokesman for that job as Treasury Secretary.
Thank you so much. David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors. He's also author of the book Understanding Central Banking. Just ahead, GM looks to speed up its self-driving car business by partnering with Microsoft. Microsoft is partnering with GM's Cruise division. They're working on self-driving vehicles. Let's talk about it. John McElroy, automotive industry analyst, host of Autoline.tv. John, let's begin with just, I guess, stating the obvious here. What once was thought the stuff of fantasy, the self-driving car, it's now just a matter of when we're going to see them all over the roads.
That's absolutely right. You know, my prediction is by 2025, everybody in the United States will have seen at some point or another an autonomous car. And, you know, Cisco, what's so interesting here is just a few years ago, 3-4 years ago, there was a big debate as to whether the tech companies were going to take over the auto industry or if the auto industry would fight them off. And in fact, we're seeing them partner together. So Microsoft going with GM, Amazon going with an EV startup called Rivian. Same thing's happening in China. There's big tech companies over there called Baidu and Tencent. They're partnering up with Chinese cars. So it's a really interesting combination of automotive and tech.
When it comes to what they're doing here as far as getting these cars on the road, are we thinking that it will be completely autonomous, like a human can do whatever they want when they're in the car on the way to work? Or is it just assisting the humans? We're still going to have to pay attention while we're driving.
Oh, yeah. Look, we're going to take baby steps here. So the first thing is something like Cadillac Super Cruise, where you set the cruise control and you can take your hands off the wheel. The car will drive itself on mapped highways. The next step is going to be on surface roads and everything in geo-fenced areas. Someday, maybe not this decade, but some do think it could happen, you'll be able to walk into a showroom and buy a car that will operate autonomously in geo-fenced areas. And then maybe in another decade beyond that, it'll take you anywhere you want to go.
What do you make of the fact that, as you touched on earlier, you have these tech companies partnering with automakers? It just shows that the two, they're really good at what they do, but to try to do it all is just not possible?
It's partly that and a number of other things, such as the tech companies. Boy, do they have deep pockets. You know, Apple has something like $90 billion in cash and securities. But here's the other thing that the auto industry sorely needs right now. Software engineers. There's a global shortage of them. Now, one of the fastest ways to be able to get big teams of people that can code is to team up with a tech partner. They've got those software engineers.
So what is, I guess, what is holding up us seeing more of these? Is it just testing? Is it making sure that they're safe? Still a lot of bugs to work out? I mean, what are we waiting for before we see more of these?
Well, yeah, you hit on it with the first thing, testing. But having said that, for example, Waymo, which is part of Google, is now offering autonomous rides in minivans in Phoenix. General Motors is going to launch later this year a ride-hailing service as well. There's a couple of Chinese companies that are doing some of this stuff in China, too. So it's already started. But, you know, you got to take baby steps, and that's what they're taking right now, and they're going to build from there.
And then what they end up doing is the AI. I mean, little by little, as these vehicles are on the road, it's just amassing more and more know-how, and then that just makes it better and better.
Exactly right. You know, the more data that you can compile as a car company or as a tech company and learn how are these things used, when might there be what they call edge cases or corner cases, you know, a whoopsie, you know, we got to deal with that. And they are accumulating massive amounts of knowledge by data mining everything that they're collecting.
Thanks so much. Always good to have you on the show. John McElroy, automotive industry analyst, host of Autoline.tv. Up next, yet another combatant in the streaming wars.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Viacom CBS will launch its streaming service called Paramount Plus. It'll happen on March 4th. Joining us on the ComEd Energy Efficiency Business Line, Tim Hanlon, founder and CEO of the Verter Group here in Chicago. Tim, kind of give us the nuts and bolts here on what Viacom and CBS are doing.
Well, here we go again, right? Cisco, it's yet another entry into the big streaming services gambit, and we all know that this was coming. The little bit of background is that CBS and Viacom merged about 2 years ago, or a year and a half ago, and obviously wanted to go big, like all of its brethren, into the streaming wars. Paramount Plus is essentially the combination of those Viacom assets and those CBS assets into a much more full-fledged offering, not unlike, say, Peacock, or their attempt to go premium versus HBO Max and Netflix and the like. And I think in many respects, some would look at this as a late entrant to the game. Certainly it is that time-wise, but it actually may be a bit shrewd and opportunistic for the Paramount Plus service in that it is not just going to be a service of on-demand offerings, both premium as well as library content, but also, I think, quite interestingly, and a bit more like Peacock, which itself was a late entrant, an inclusion, an embrace of live programming as well. That, is, of course, means that the CBS television network and the CBS TV stations, he says, as well as live sports broadcasts and the like. So I think it's going to be a very interesting, shall we say, next generation, no pun intended if you're a Star Trek fan, kind of environment where Paramount Plus is trying to be not only library content, not only original premium content, but also live programming as well, the best of, shall we call it, traditional television too.
Yeah, we talk about this. I think probably every time we talk about the streaming wars, we say there's already so many. There will be more on the horizon. How many $5.99 a month dings are people willing to deal with on their credit cards? And yet I'm wondering, you could do 3, 4, 5 of these services and still not even be close to the cost of cable. So maybe people will continue to do multiples.
Well, that too. And the reality, Cisco, is that, you know, these services are easily added and deleted from one's menu, right? These are month-to-month subscriptions, right? So the real challenge in competition for all these services now is going to be how to retain these subscribers and induce them not to churn out. But from a consumer perspective, I think you're going to see a lot more leaning in, if you will, not just sort of passively subscribing and forgetting about all these services, but literally seeing, okay, this month perhaps is a show that I'm interested in, log in, subscribe, and then frankly, unsubscribe. And that's going to be a daunting challenge for these media companies who have been much more dependent on persistent revenue over time versus on and off.
Really interesting. Thank you so much, Tim Hanlon. He is founder and CEO of the Verter Group. Still ahead, Travel Tuesday, an update on travel restrictions as a new administration takes over in Washington.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. A top member of the Senate Intelligence Committee says major damage was done to America's intelligence community under the Trump administration. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell squarely places blame for the riot on President Trump. In Travel Tuesday, President-elect Biden expected to maintain travel restrictions to Europe and some other parts of the globe. Restaurant chain IHOP making moves to attract more takeout customers. WBBM Business, the Dow up 149, NASDAQ is up 180, and the S&P up 31, oil up 1%. Clouds in Chicagoland, maybe an inch of snow overnight tonight. Right now, 26 degrees. The wind chill makes it feel like 16. Several of President-elect Biden's cabinet members are undergoing confirmation hearings today. Avril Haines, the nominee as Director of National Intelligence, is among them. Senator Mark Warner, Vice Chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, says a lot of damage was done under President Trump.
Our intelligence professionals have been unfairly maligned. Their expertise, knowledge, and analysis has often been ignored or even sometimes ridiculed by a president who seems oftentimes uninterested in facts.
If confirmed, Haynes will become the first woman in the post. It was created after the 9/11 attacks. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell pointing his finger directly at President Trump for helping to spur the assault on the U.S. Capitol 2 weeks ago. The Republican from Kentucky spoke on the Senate floor today, saying the mob was fed lies. They were provoked by the president and other powerful people. A Senate trial on whether to convict Trump and possibly bar him from ever holding federal office again is expected to begin in the coming days. It's 12:32.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Markets are rising today. Let's see what's going on. Jeff Kilberg is here, CEO of KKM Financial here in Chicago. Jeff, what do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Well, Cisco, Happy New Year. And you're seeing the marketplace once again rejoice. I think Janet Yellen in front of the Senate is a big deal today. She's going to be the new Treasury Secretary. As you remember, that she was the head of the Federal Reserve, and she certainly has been one of the most accommodative or dovish Fed chairman ever. So I think the market is seeing that she's going to be a voice for additional stimulus, additional type of infrastructure spending, and more importantly, interest rates will stay low for longer.
And in the end, that impacts the markets because you have more money that can flow into securities and also just more money in the economy in general?
It does. And we've kind of become addicted to these low interest rates. But nonetheless, that does make buying houses more affordable. It does getting that new car more affordable. These lower interest rates, I think they're here to stay. And the Federal Reserve, before Janet Yellen was being appointed as new Treasury Secretary for soon-to-be President Biden, the fact of the matter was that they weren't even considering moving interest rates higher until 2023. So I think that really puts the position of the Fed to be more supportive of the stock market. And what does that mean in layman's terms? Well, the Fed expanded their balance sheet last year, Cisco, by 77%. They went from $4 trillion up to $7 trillion. So that money has to go somewhere. And where is it going? It's going into stocks.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's been really fascinating to watch is you have people who don't necessarily need the stimulus money. And so they're going, hey, this is almost play around money. And they're putting it in the stocks. And what do you think that does to valuations? I mean, is that driving any prices higher?
Well, it does. And I think it's kind of a mixed bag. There are some really stretched valuations. If you look at some of the COVID-19 stocks, like a Zoom, like a Peloton, certainly very frothy. But then there's other names, outsider in the wake of COVID-19, that are starting to get some type of love, if you will. The laggards, you know, we're seeing some of these names. If it's International Paper, if it's 3M or General Electric, or look at General Motors finally getting a little bit of love, up nearly 10% today. So I think you're seeing the rotation trade, and that's really critical as you rebalance and reposition your personal portfolio to understand, yes, it's important to have a tech exposure, but there's some great industrial names that kind of got forgotten about, Cisco, during COVID-19, during the pandemic.
And some of those have decent dividends, too, so you can get a little cash while you're waiting for the growth.
That's right. I think it's a great point to focus on dividends. But you also have to understand, you know, a perfect name like Tesla. Tesla was up a mere 750% in 2020. Now, all of a sudden, you're seeing the electronic vehicle undercurrent. It'll tilt a little bit more towards General Motors. So you're seeing General Motors up nearly 50% in just the last 3 months. So I think you have to book profits. I think you have to rebalance. Have your exposure in line with where the goals are, but understand that the stock market has come a long way. But I think it still has more room to run because all the central bankers continue to support their economies, which certainly are dislocated from the stock market, no matter where you are in the globe.
Yeah, Jeff, what I need is for you to tell me exactly when some of these stocks are going to stop growing, and that's when I'll pull my money out. So why don't you help me with that?
You call me later. You call me later on that one, pal.
Let's talk about Goldman Sachs. Maybe not surprising that they're just crushing it.
Well, Goldman Sachs, really interesting. So the pure bank play, like a Bank of America, Wells Fargo, really struggling in this low rate interest rate environment. But what's interesting, Goldman Sachs, a very dynamic investment bank. They actually do a lot of trading in the marketplace, but they've also had a great couple quarters on mergers and acquisitions. So their M&A really helped them knock the cover off the ball, over $12 of earnings per share. So I think that's a kind of a bank, or even like a BlackRock, not really a true old bank that we're historically used to, more of a financial services like a Goldman Sachs or a BlackRock. It makes a lot of sense owning moving forward.
Let's talk about Bitcoin briefly. What do you make of that, as there are some predictions it will keep rising?
well, what a volatile trade it has been. But I'm optimistic and I'm bullish on Bitcoin. I know it's been a wild ride, another 4% move higher today at 37,000 last on the Bitcoin futures at the CME Group. But I think you have to understand what is Bitcoin and how does it fit into your exposure. If it's some type of exposure, you know, old people like myself at the ripe old age of 46, we talk about a safe haven in gold, Cisco. Well, now anybody younger than that is looking at Bitcoin or some other type of cryptocurrency as more of a safe haven. And I think it makes a lot of sense to have exposure, but you have to pick your timing because I think Bitcoin is going to continue to move up, but there's a lot of volatility. And if you look at a chart, I think it's going to revisit 31, 32,000 here short term.
Thanks so much, Jeff Kilberg, CEO of KKM Financial. Just ahead, Travel Tuesday, a look at travel restrictions amid the changing of the guard at the White House.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday on the Noon Business Hour. President-elect Joe Biden will take office tomorrow, and he will have the executive power to dictate travel restrictions. Joining us on the ComEd Energy Efficiency Business Line, Joe Schwederman, Professor of Public Services, Director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul University. Joe, it's always good to have you on the show here. It sounds like the incoming president is not going to necessarily be lifting all of the travel restrictions.
Yeah, that's right. And President Trump's announcement, he would lift those restrictions for Europe and Brazil, did raise some eyebrows because just a few days before, you know, the inauguration, and Biden wasted no time to throw it back saying not so fast.
And why is that? I mean, is this the COVID issue, safety issues?
You know, it's really kind of a judgment call here that right now international travel requires quarantining. It requires registering, all kind of things that make it really difficult. And the Trump administration felt the time had come. If you showed up at the airport with a negative test within 3 days, you could arrive at the U.S. and have, you know, far fewer restrictions on travel once you got here. And, you know, we're in the second pandemic. Things are still growing in some European countries. So there's certainly a good argument to be made that the Trump move came a little bit fast. And I'll have to say that there's an element of politics in this, too, probably, given just the timing. So it's not caused any big airline backlash. Stocks looking okay today, but it is a bit of a soap opera here.
Yeah, what kind of an impact is this having on the travel industry? Obviously, they want things to be as open as possible, as soon as possible.
You know, we had that real nice bump at Christmas and New Year's. We had some days that were about 50-60% of normal, you might say, pre-pandemic. And things have fallen again. International travel has never really come back, although I've heard some reports that people are just getting better at figuring out how to do the quarantining and be able to fly back and forth and not completely stop international travel. But, you know, spring break trips for groups or summer vacation, you know, without some assurance you don't have to quarantine, that's really going to still put a damper on that segment.
Yeah, because, I mean, most people can't afford to, instead of taking a 1 week or 2 week trip to Europe, making it a 4 week trip because of the quarantine.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, Europe trips, you really plan ahead, especially groups. They may plan 4 or 5 months ahead. So I think part of the Trump idea was to get people thinking about, okay, we can start thinking about going to Europe. And, you know, by spring, we do think things will have calmed down on the, you know, on the outbreak front. But I'll have to say that Trump's move may have come a few weeks before many of us felt the timing is right for it.
In general, we now have months of data here. In general, are we finding that planes are not necessarily super spreader places, that in general, you can get on a plane and get off of a plane and you don't catch it?
I think that's right. I think, you know, it's hard to do a controlled experiment, of course, on that. But we haven't seen a lot of tracing to things happening on airplanes. The air ventilation is pretty decent. There's, of course, tightly regulated movements of people, and people don't face each other. But, yeah, of course, the problem is, you know, once people are out about in society, then the spreading can happen. So I think the move is less about contagious effects on planes. But it has certainly been good news for the airline industry that people are not viewing airports as hotbeds. And let's hope it stays that way.
And so for people, if you're not necessarily taking a trip where you're going to go out in public, you know, try to go to museums or something like that, if you're just going and you're going to hang out in a condo, you're going to be on the beach away from people, it may not be as dangerous or risky, I should say, as we might have assumed a few months ago.
And that's exactly what we're seeing. People who have a spouse that's overseas, they'll fly over and they'll stay at a Airbnb or at a private home, and it's not that big a deal to quarantine if you have family on one end or the other. But it's those leisure trips. And, of course, we know the European airline market depends so heavily on that, especially transatlantic, more so than transpacific. And Europe has just been really hot pre-pandemic in terms of travel. And, of course, we in Chicago, we get a lot of international visitors, and that's hard to see if that's going to bounce back at all before summer.
Yeah, obviously, a lot of the local leaders are hoping so. They want those tourists here. Thank you so much, Joe Schwederman, Professor of Public Services, Director of the Chaddock Institute at DePaul. That's Travel Tuesday. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. And still to come, a restaurant chain best known for breakfast is pushing its business in later parts of the day.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Parent company Dine Brands is introducing new menu items at IHOP restaurants, hoping to attract more carryout customers. We're joined by R.J. Hottovy, an analyst at Aaron Allen Capital Partners here in Chicago. R.J., can I help us understand what IHOP is trying to do here?
Yeah, I think they're learning a lesson that a lot of players have learned through the pandemic, and that is that not all foods travel well with delivery. Obviously, delivery and takeout has been the preferred methods for consumers to get food in this day and age. And I think they're learning that pancakes may not be the best thing to travel. And so they're trying some new menu items to entice people to come in and also order delivery. I think they're learning that not everybody can be pizza and that you have to get creative on your menu with when it comes to delivery and things that travel well.
Are they also struggling with the fact that when you think IHOP, you think sitting down? I mean, you gather the family together, you go in. I mean, this is an hour, hour and a half. It's a time of hanging out. And that's just really what they've been a part of ever since they've been around.
Yeah, I think that's been a struggle for a lot of full service and casual dining restaurants. They've spent so much time and effort refining the in-restaurant experience. And so to translate that experience to delivery and takeout doesn't always work. And we've seen things like new menu introductions has been a key thing. But you know, in a lot of cases, streamlining the menu so you can make things quicker. Things like offering entertainment or movies to go along with the food is something we've started to see more and more of. Different packaging to make it travel further. I mean, it's something that we've seen a lot of players try to get creative on, but I'd say that not everybody has figured it out yet. And so, IHOP, I think this is a good step, but you're right. It's difficult overcoming, what people perceive in the restaurant and translate that over to the delivery.
You touched on the fact that pancakes, they don't really keep well. You have to eat them when they're fresh. So the menu items that they're introducing, these are things that are designed to be able to keep a little better. Maybe you can eat them 10, 15 minutes after they were made.
Yeah, I think that's the intention here is something that will travel a bit better. And I think we're starting to see a lot of innovation on the packaging side, too. So maybe someday we'll be able to do the pancakes through delivery as well. But yeah, I think this is just something, well, really twofold. One is to have a menu that travels better and something that will carry with the average delivery time anywhere between 15 and 30 minutes. But then also to broaden what people might think of the brand, too. That's one of the other interesting facts about COVID is that I think a lot of brands are really using this opportunity to reinvent themselves. It's almost a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to reinvent what consumers think about them. And so this might be a case just trying to find some new options on the menu. Most of the stuff they're offering looks like it might be higher ticket items as well. So an opportunity to take that average price point up. So I think that some of the motivation there, not just something that travels well, but also an opportunity to maybe expand what consumers think about it while offering some potential to take the prices up.
Good insight. Thanks so much. R.J. Hottovy, an analyst at Aaron Allen Capital Partners here in Chicago. You'll find past programs later today, a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.TV. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.